In the run-up to this year's election, a number of states passed laws that critics say were designed to suppress voting, especially by minorities, students, and the elderly, groups that are more likely to vote for Democratic candidates. In states like Pennsylvania, where legal challenges to those laws went to court, significant parts of those laws were overturned or put on hold until after the November election. Voter ID laws are among the many issues that are likely to be heard by the Supreme Court, a court that has become increasingly political over the years. Caroline Fredrickson, president of the American Constitution Society, says it's difficult to know how the court will view these and other cases that are likely to come before it.
We know that the Supreme Court issued a bad decision in the Crawford case several years ago regarding photo IDs under Indiana law. There will be a number of challenges that are going to come up to the court. We're certainly expecting them to deal with the challenge to the Voting Rights Act in short order. You know, as much as people think about how important elections are and focus on Congress and the White House, the courts have played a critical role in shaping our public policy, including who wins elections and how elections are run. And so we can despair about the decision in Citizens United because the court in that case dismantled what were some rather mild regulations controlling money in politics and unleashed a flood of billionaire money, as we saw with Sheldon Adelson and the others. But the courts also were a somewhat effective backstop, at least in the short term, against the proliferation of efforts at the state level to make it harder and harder and harder for people to vote, from making the registration process more difficult to shortening early voting and to requiring photo IDs. So I think we really need to understand that the courts are there for good or ill, and only if progressives engage and make sure that there is a judiciary that's reflective of an understanding of the Constitution that is really about protecting people's rights, we're going to end up with more of the Citizens United type of decisions and less of the decisions that actually prevented the states from doing their worst to inhibit what were mostly efforts to prevent African Americans and other minorities, as well as the elderly, from voting. Well, and I shouldn't forget students, who are also the subject of quite a bit of legislation from the right.
Some of these laws will go into effect in the coming months. So are we still looking at voter suppression efforts that were begun before the election having an impact, even though they didn't affect the outcome this time?
That's absolutely right. I think one of the things that worried me when I picked up the paper the day after the election was that in papers as well respected as the New York Times and the Washington Post, there were stories about how money didn't play that big a role and elections actually ran okay. And the upshot is people come away thinking, well, because in this one instance they were not able to either buy the election or prevent everyone from voting, that therefore we should think that everything is fine. In fact, we need to step back and figure out how to avoid this in the future, because the right learns, as does the left, in what can make a difference in advancing your cause. In this case, their cause is rather nefarious in denying people the right to vote and having money influence politics. But it clearly did, and we can't assume that because Obama happened to win and because Sheldon Adelson didn't buy the White House that somehow we're fine. We need to figure out a concerted plan to roll back the bad legislation that's already been passed, to have strategies to prevent any from being adopted in the future, and an approach to the court system that recognizes them as a vital part of the system of government that we have and an important, important backstop against government overreach in trying to prevent people from voting or in allowing money to influence the system in a way that is contrary to democracy and our core values.
One of the things that was remarkable was the amount of money that was spent at the state level in statewide races for the Senate and House. This in part grew out of the Montana decision in the Supreme Court that struck down Montana's control on spending. So are we likely to see more efforts on the state level because of Citizens United and the Supreme Court ruling in that area?
No doubt. There will be more extreme efforts at the state level to increase the role of money in the political system. We're already seeing it not just in state legislative battles for the governorship or for state house, but also for state judges. And I think if there's anything that should give us pause, it's the idea that big money is going to influence who the judges are who decide cases. You know, when somebody's suing a corporation and the corporation has already given a huge campaign contribution to a judge, is that really a system that seems fair? And it certainly is implausible that it actually is fair. And so I think the money is not just going to be expanded in these sort of what we consider to be more political races, but also in the races for the state judiciary. And we've already seen that. We've been tracking the dollars, and it is exploding. The increase in the amount of money going towards people trying to become an elected judge is just through the roof, and it's very, very disturbing.
What's your feeling now that the election is over? Where should the effort be put to try to keep the courts on track?
Here's one thing that I think is essential. We as progressives can no longer sit back, put all of our focus on passing legislation and fixing problems and not pay attention to the courts. The Affordable Care Act decision, a lot of people think that we won. And we did in some sense in that the law was actually not struck down. But the language in that decision has dire implications for progressive legislation already on the books and things that we might pass. Five conservative justices agreed that the Commerce Clause provides no support for Congress to actually legislate to address national problems. Chief Justice Roberts, aligned with the more liberal justices, found that the taxing power allowed the law to stand. But the Commerce Clause is such a critical element in terms of progressive legislation, is the anchor and the source in the Constitution for so much of what Congress has done to address national problems, that now we potentially see a source for the right to challenge existing laws, as well as a hurdle for future legislation to overcome. And that's a legacy that is going to be very hard to undo. And so I think we need to regroup. We progressives need to put energy and effort into making sure that we have a full complement of progressive judges on the bench, and we need to make sure that we support a progressive view of the Constitution, because clearly people have a lot of passion and put a lot of passion into issues, but we need the infrastructure, and the infrastructure includes the courts. And without the courts having judges who actually understand their role in terms of respecting and enforcing constitutional rights, all those legislative victories are going to be for naught.
Caroline Fredrickson is president of the American Constitution Society, based in Washington, D.C.